I have the great honor to present to you the President of the United States.
I hereby dedicate the World's Fair, the New York World's Fair of 1939.
As the scene opens now, we find Amos and Andy in the fresh air taxicab arriving at one of the nine entrances of the New York World's Fair.
Well, here's the gate right up here, now, Andy. And there's a policeman standing there. He looked like the Northwest Mounted, don't he?
Yeah, wait a minute. Maybe we better not go in there. I can see Mr. Whale some other time.
Wait a minute.
Britain went to war against Germany today, 25 years and 30 days from the time she entered the war of 1914 against the same enemy. France is expected to follow suit within the next few hours.
From the Meadowbrook on the Newark-Pompton Turnpike, Route 23 at Cedar Grove, New Jersey, we bring you the music of Count Basie and his orchestra. And the first number, the 1 o'clock jump.
Hi, this is Gary Moore. All of those voices were broadcast during a few nervous months of the summer of 1939. In those last years of peace, I think radio perfected its talent for bridging great distances with the flick of a switch. We learned to bring in Moscow, Chongqing, South America, even the Steel Pier at Atlantic City, right on cue. Remember all those nostalgic ballrooms of the 30s and 40s? You could hear a band remote every 15 minutes all night long, it seemed. And I might add that Benny Goodman was at his absolute zenith around 1939, and there was some first-rate music to be heard. And now, back to the control room at NBC. The voice is Ben Grauer.
I used to do a roundup, and we'd call in 8 or 10 capitals of the world. We were beginning to have a staff in each of the great cities. Full-time, not stringers. Now, I got word just before I went on that there was something wrong with the Madrid circuit and that we would go Paris first and then London. So I introduced Paris, and Paris was on. As I was sitting there and my head was down, musing and listening to what was coming from Paris while with the other ear I was listening to London, upcoming London, I heard a voice say, "Look up, Ben." And there was the director of the program in behind the glass booth with a piece of paper written on it, Spain, and signal me, not London, Spain. When we finished the show, I suddenly said, "Oh, who said look up, Ben? What was all that?" He said, "With 30 seconds to go, London coming, RCA said they now have the Madrid circuit, and I wanted to get it fast before we lose it. I rapped on the glass, and you didn't respond. You couldn't hear me. I thought maybe you're plugged into London." So I said, "Hey, Fred Bate, I think Ben is plugged into you. Tell him to look up." So Jack's voice went out to London, 3,000 miles. Bates said, "Hey, look up, Ben," came back to me 3,000 miles, and I looked up 6 feet into the director's eye.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin. Moscow, Germany, and Russia today signed a non-aggression pact. They have agreed that neither country would declare war against one another and that neither one would come to the aid of a third party in case either nation was attacked.
No amount of swing and jive and gags and rhythm could drown out for long the news from Europe. Suddenly, it was September 1st, 1939.
Danzig, wirtschaftlich zu vernichten, dass dann Deutschland nicht mehr länger untätig zusehen könnte.
We interrupt this broadcast of Adolf Hitler's speech just momentarily to report a dispatch from Paris which says that Premier Daladier of France has now called the French Council of Ministers for an emergency meeting which is to take place just 10 minutes from now at 5:30 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time.
Provokationen begangen. Meine Friedensliebe! um meine endlose Langmut soll man nicht mit Schwäche oder gar mit Feigheit verwechseln.
No one should confuse my patience with cowardice.
Once again, we interrupt very briefly this talk by Chancellor Hitler to announce that in London, Parliament has been summoned to meet at 6 p.m. in London, which is 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time today.
I am speaking to you from the Cabinet Room at 10 Downing Street. This morning, the British ambassador in Berlin handed the German government a final note. This country is at war with Germany.
Those fabulous Dorseys.
Tommy Dorsey and the orchestra blow the dust off a great old favorite, Song of India.
We interrupt our regular program to bring you a special broadcast. We take you now to Montevideo, Uruguay.
We have just seen the Grass B explode 5 miles from the coast. The ship has been scuttled.
The Grass Bay, when it was scuttled down in Montevideo, there was only one line from Montevideo to Buenos Aires, and we happened to get that line first, and we had a fella just reading the telephone directory on it all day.
NBC's news and special events director was Abe Schechter, a man of great determination despite his quiet voice. The date was 2 weeks before Christmas, 1939.
Actually, we didn't even have a man in Uruguay. We didn't know it was coming in there, and we got hold of a man who was working at the so-called American Club, and we hired him and made him a reporter. And then we told him to hire anybody that could talk English. We didn't want the opposition to get a hold of anybody to be able to do a report. He found four or five fellows who talked English, and he hired them. All of them, hired them all. And he reported back that it was pretty hard to see way out to sea, 4 or 5 miles into the harbor and so on. We asked him if there was any kind of a tall place where he could get a better view. And came back, he said, yeah, there's a lighthouse. But the fellow wants $250 or something for us to use it to go up there. So we figured if we pay $250, the opposition might pay $350. So we said, does he want to sell it? So we bought the lighthouse for $1,000. And we got rid of it for $300 the day after the broadcast. But they went up there and they could see way out into the bay, so they could give us a description.
Moving. Growing from side to side. There goes another explosion. The after turret has gone up. She's going down. She's going down by the stern. The stern is completely underwater. Flames are still shooting up into the air. Smoke.
Well, the Graf Spee went down in only 3 minutes after the crew scuttled her. But a personal telegram from President Roosevelt to NBC made the cost of the lines and the lighthouse seem insignificant.
Good evening, and to the West Coast. To this side, good morning. Presenting a program of music by Count Basie, the Count of Swing. This program of ultra-modern rhythm comes to you from the Savoy Ballroom, known as the home of Happy Feet. Count Basie, the singing of Willie Holiday and James Rushing is heard here nightly.
I remember 1940 as a year of terrible battles inside the broadcasting industry. Let's take recordings, for instance. Now, all during the 30s, we had to identify each record as a recording or an electrical transcription, and this carried such a stigma for the networks that delayed broadcast of any kind was extremely rare. Now, that all changed in 1940 when the FCC relaxed the rules about identification. In 1941, ASCAP boycotted the stations. Money was at the root of this altercation. But for a whole season, all you could hear was music in the public domain. Do-a, 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 do-a.
I dream. Do-a.
Then, the following year, the musicians went on strike against the record companies. So all you could hear was vocals with a vocal backing.
In my arms, ain't I never gonna get a girl in my arms, in my arms, in my arms.
But these were small wars, of course, compared to what was going on in Europe. I remember so well a torrent of voices pleading, demanding, and castigating our involvement in what was still, after all, a foreign war. Now here is Fulton Lewis, Jr., speaking for the anti-interventionists.
It appears tonight that the war in Europe is becoming more of a headache than it is a boon to the aviation industry in the United States, which expected such tremendous help from that war, and is becoming such a headache. And Secretary Morgenthau announced today that the federal government will have to step in to make sure that the plane orders for France and England are not allowed to interfere with the supply of airplanes for our own Army and Navy and commercial airlines. They will have to be served first of all. After that, the rest of the engines that are turned out can be used in planes for England or France or Timbuktu or any other country.
The date on that one is 1940. I recall hearing Edward R. Murrow, also in 1940, on the air, live, during the Battle of Britain.
This is Trafalgar Square. The noise that you hear at the moment is the sound of the air raid siren. I'm standing here just on the steps of St. Martin's in the Fields. A searchlight just burst into action off in the distance. One single beam sweeping the sky above me now.
How touched we were, and how moved by the voice of Churchill.
Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
And the famous Christmas message of Princess Elizabeth.
My sister is by my side, and we are both going to say good night to you. Come on, Margaret. Good night, children. Good night, and good luck to you all.
And smile at me, the nightingale sang in Berkeley Square.
Nevertheless, the early 40s were wonderful years for radio. All of the big nighttime comedy shows were on, and CBS was producing its very finest dramatic shows. I myself was doing something called Club Matinee in Chicago, and we had a variety format with rapid sketches and jokes, the whole marvelous thing conceived in style by its star, Ransom Sherman. Any real radio buff remembers Ransom until this day. A really literate, gentle, funny fellow. So literate that the show was unsponsored for 8 full years. Then I came to New York to do something called Anything Goes, which was the same kind of show, until someone at NBC put me on the air with Jimmy Durante. We both thought we were mismatched. You know, different ages, different styles. But something must have been right, because Durante and Moore was on for 5 years.
Well, Jimmy, no matter what anybody tells you, you go right on wearing that suit.
A suggestion I sustain.
Hmm?
Why, even Lucius Beebe refers to me as the Bum Brummel of Broadway. But my fame has already reached the OPA. They called me to Washington for a consultation on women's clothes. On the train, I met Elmer Davis, Umbriago, Senator Pepper, Umbriago, Governor Bricker, and Umbriago.
Who's Umbriago?
He was the conductor. He went through the train yelling, change for Elizabeth, change for Elizabeth. And would you believe it, Gary? I chipped in a quarter and I didn't even know the girl.
That was Jimmy's style. Somewhere in the midst of all the excitement, we had an election. And still another voice was heard on the already crowded airwaves.
One man rule always leads to the road to war. If you re-elect him, you may expect war in April 1941. Join me in this crusade to save free America. Help, help. Please help us in this crusade. Become aroused.
This was Wendell Willkie, who lost to President Roosevelt's third term.
I shall say it again and again and again. Your boys are not going to be sent into any foreign war.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special news bulletin. The Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, by air, President Roosevelt has just announced. The attack also was made on all naval and military activities on the principal island of Oahu.
When the Japanese planes attacked Pearl Harbor, it was radio that shocked the nation and flashed the news to every city and town within minutes after the attack began. The following day, 60 million people heard the president speak to Congress and to the nation.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
For the first year of the war, radio was a carrier of bad news. Radio seemed to reinforce the distance and the loneliness and the sense of disaster as we gave up one spot after another with names we barely recognized. Places like Luzon and Bataan and Corregidor.
This is Lieutenant General J.M. Wainwright. Subject, surrender. Yesterday, I tendered to Lieutenant General Connell, the Commander-in-Chief of the Imperial Japanese Forces in the Philippines, the surrender of the four harbor defense forts of Manila Bay.
And I can't praise too highly the war correspondents, men like Murrow and Eric Severide and Larry LeSueur and Bob Trout, and the commentators who did their utmost to interpret to the American people a war that for a while seemed overwhelming. They were eloquent men, and above all, they wrote brilliantly. One voice in particular had a reassuring sound, even in 1942.
The Office of War Information presents its director, Elmer Davis, in his weekly report to the American people at home and to America's fighting forces overseas.
We've had another week of air war, the greatest air war that the world has yet seen, and its scale is still increasing. For 6 days and nights, American and British bombers based in England have been steadily pounding northwestern Germany. And the cities on the Ruhr seem to be in worse shape now than was any city in England after the blitz of 2 years ago last winter. It's not necessary to take too literally the stories from Switzerland that 4 or 5 million people are moving out of the Ruhr to realize that this industrial district is not what it used to be.
It's the old Professor K. Kaiser.
Praise the Lord to pass the ammunition. Praise the Lord to pass the ammunition. Praise the Lord to pass the ammunition and we'll all stay free.
You know, during the First War, radio was a primitive tool that kept the ships in touch with the shore and vice versa. In the interim between the wars, it had mushroomed into a roaring entertainment industry, a marketing and sales empire, and a news machine that amazed even those who worked for it. As a morale builder, it was unbeatable, and more often than not, it was set to music.
You're a step, Mr. Jeff, to make a Yankee cranky. You're a step, Mr. Jeff, Uncle Sam is gonna spanky. Wait and see before we're done. The A, B, C, and D will think you're rising sun. You're a
I'm a prisoner of war on a foreign shore where I fought for the red, white, and blue. There's a star-spangled banner waving somewhere in a distant land so many miles away.
Only Uncle Sam's great heroes get to go there, where I wish that I could also live someday.
The warm days of William Penn, we did it before. What more? We'll do it again.
Lucky Strike presents Your Hit Parade with Axel Stordahl, the Lucky Strike Orchestra, Beryl Davis, Ken Lane, and the Hit Paraders, and starring Frank Sinatra.
Yep, it would take more than a war to interrupt the Hit Parade. Even the ASCAP strike didn't interrupt it, really. This is MC Andre Baruch.
The Hit Parade, which was sponsored by American Tobacco, was a very unusual show in that, first of all, it was controlled by one man, basically, who didn't know too much about music, George Washington Hill, the president of the American Tobacco Company. He wasn't interested in beautifying the music or rearranging it. You know, if he played The Lady in Red, boom, it just went The Lady in Red, as fast as you could go, you know. And a singer was killed on the show, and he had some great singers on there. My wife was one, Barry Wood, Frank Sinatra, Lawrence Melchior, Lawrence Tibbett. They all had to sing according to Mr. Hill's dictates.
And I remember a really fabulous show during the war that originated in Hollywood, where most of the big stars did their own shows. It was called Command Performance, and GIs would write in and ask for something like, I would like to hear Rita Hayworth sigh. So the MC, who might be Orson Welles or Bob Hope, would say, and now by Command Performance, Miss Rita Hayworth will sigh for Private Joe Smith in Sicily. And she'd get up to the microphone and she'd go, and thank you, Miss Rita Hayworth. And she'd step down. And I'm quite sure that no personality in radio or movies or Broadway ever refused one of those command performances. So believe me, it was a dazzling show.
Command Performance, USA. Presented this week and every week till it's over there. Okay there, gang. This is Harry Von Zell reminding you that it's time to join us once again for another session dedicated to answering your request to Command Performance, Armed Forces Radio, Los Angeles, USA. Now, it's come to our attention that a lot of you guys have been reading comic books while our shows are on. Now, we realize that you men and women in the Army, Navy, Coast Guard, and Marines can do exactly as you please at any time. Command Performance hates to lose any listeners. So for you guys who like comic strips, tonight we're going to devote our entire time to a real super-duper two-fisted He-Man thriller, Dick Tracy. Ready, Maestro. Overture.
This particular Command Performance was one of radio's highlights. Dinah Shore played Tess Trueheart, Sinatra was in it, the sound effects were right out of Gangbusters, and the stars right out of The Road to Morocco.
The jig is up. Reach for the ceiling. It's Dick Tracy, you swine. That's funny. Nobody here. The First National Bank is empty.
Drop that gun and turn around, Tracy.
If that voice belongs to who I think it does, I may never turn around.
What a pleasure.
I'd like to give credit to all of the stars and entertainers who gave camp shows, sometimes even before there were camps. Just the back of a truck set up in the jungle. But time is running out. This is Gary Moore. We're a little late tonight, folks. I'll be back on the next side with more shows of the 40s. But before we go, here's a word from the guy who gave so many camp shows, Bob Hope.
The same old bloodline is on Iwo Jima tonight. Iwo Jima translated as Rock Island, but every Marine knows it really spells hell. It's the front porch of Tokyo with a death's head on the welcome mat. It's volcanic dust that bites the lungs, sulfur smoke that burns them, hot lava and hot lead. The world's toughest fight. By comparison to EO, 2 days in the real hell would be like a weekend at Lake Arrowhead. You know, it took Betsy Ross just a bit of cotton bunting to make the first American flag. And, mister, let's never forget what it's taken the Marine Corps to hoist that bit of bunting on Iwo Jima. Good night, fellas.